once again, I'm amazed by my own gift for putting together a schedule for the year for speakers, because I gave myself the topic of immortality without thinking twice about it. And then when I started to prepare for the talk, you know how we practitioners joke about when we prepare for a talk, it seems like everything in our life is about that topic. And I was worried about this one, certainly. And we have had a couple of major transitions. One of our members transitioned after I began preparation, and we had her memorial service, and also Pete's father made his transition, and another member of the local community also made his transition, and I personally am working on a memorial service for a friend of mine well in advance of the event. And that may sound a little funny to you, but he has a disease that is gradually paralyzing him, and he's begun to lose his ability to speak. And so he had said that he wanted me to do his memorial service and that he wanted to get his preferences in there, so I needed to do that while he could still talk. So while I'm not grieving him at this moment, I am actively working on his memorial service. So that's just one of those things we do. And I personally have had, as a teenager, I had a near-death experience. And I was in the hospital having my back worked on. They gave me a shot of something, and I stopped breathing, and I started leaving my body, and it was a great experience. I was really disappointed about having to come back because it seemed like Earth, you know, our fleshly life is kind of heavy compared to the exhilaration I felt in leaving my body. And so for me, the subject of death isn't particularly, or my own death is not particularly worrisome so much as the thought of dealing with other people's deaths, because we grow attached to people. We love them. We have connections with them. And when they're not in our life anymore, we miss them. So, like I said, I was concerned that I'd have to talk about just death and that my focus would create a lot of death around me. Well, in truth, it did. But I also discovered that there's more in the subject of immortality in the Science of Mind textbook than just on death. And there are so many expansive topics that we address in the Science of Mind textbook, one of which being that God is all there is. That's a huge concept. Or that there is only one mind, and that one mind contains all the thoughts that were ever thought in this, you know, in this multiverse, I guess. And so immortality, likewise, is a very expansive subject. And so today I'm going to focus on life after death, why we die, heaven and hell, for those that still believe in heaven and hell, and also the topic of grieving. The reason we have a body is because our souls seem to need a physical house in which to express on a physical level. So in other words, there are a lot. If you've watched the movie Ghost, he had a really hard time connecting with his former love, and that's why we have bodies, so we can connect with other people, we can do things, we can have fun, we can sit in meetings like this. And so we also have a non-physical part to us that never dies, that was, you know, when God was, you know, from the beginning of time, we've always existed in the non-physical form. And right now, as we're sitting in the room, we not only have our bodies, but each one of us has our non-physical self. We sometimes call that our inner being. But it's the part of us that when our body decides that it's no longer a suitable instrument for carrying on our lives, this part of us continues on as the body is laid aside. In the earlier Science of Mind training, when we in the Foundations class, they had something called the core concepts. And each core concept, and I won't go into them, but each one had an idea that was expressed on the macro or the universal level, and and also on the micro or the individual level. So if you think of the physical universe, you can think of that as being the body of God. And our own bodies are at the micro level, or the individual level. When we die, of course, our bodies go back to the natural elements. I personally expect to be cremated, and my ashes left up in the woods up in Connecticut, where I spent a lot of happy years. And death, to me, is just a natural part of the life cycle. But yet, when we die, where do we go? You know, we have this non-physical self. Is there a place, you know, like this up above the clouds where we go to, where we're listening to music all the time? I'm not real sure. I would like to offer up the thought that perhaps we're everywhere we want to be at any given time. We just don't show up. And I don't know about any of you, but certainly we all have the opportunity to experience a lot of non-physical presence, either through ghosts or maybe you hear a loved one who seems to speak to you after they've passed on. And so our non-physical selves are as real as our physical selves. It's just that it's not something you can see, so it's something you have to work with a little bit in your mind and just know that it is there. Holmes himself really never comes out and says that there is such a thing as reincarnation, much as we might love for him to have done that. I would imagine if we could channel Holmes today, that would might be one of the things we'd ask him about. Hey, Ernie, is there really such a thing? Are you reborn right now, or where are you? But he does say that if a soul can create and sustain a body here, it can create and sustain one in the hereafter. And he talks about when we die, we move to another plane of expression. And that's another aspect of the development of the soul when we consider immortality. Sometimes when I read parts of Holmes, he would lead one to believe that our soul is in kind of a spiral form of development. That's an interesting concept. We use that in software development. It's a development methodology. But at the same time, our souls have that same, starting from a very small circle and expanding and ever expanding. And so he says that nature won't let us stay in one place too long, and that we stay long enough to gather the experience that we need to unfold and advance our soul. But at some point, it's like in a job. You go only so far, and then you really need to move on. And so that's why we transition either to another place or into the next expression of life. And he says that the spiral of life is ever upward, and I love that. I just love that image. So, at the same time, when he talks about a plane of expression, I also have the feeling that within any given lifetime that we move very frequently from one plane of expression to another. So it's something that we experience in the here and right and now. And by that, I mean that a lot of times we'll have things like an aha, or we will simply shift from, you know, a state of believing a certain thing about a topic, and then we'll have an insight and our belief will be expanded. And so we move in some ways to a new plane of expression just by doing that. And so you can think of death in that way too, that we're constantly having a death in our life, death to one level of thought, moving to a new level of thought, and on and on. And he says that death is passing to a higher sphere of life and action, and to know that we maintain an identity of the body, physical body, we're independent of that identity, is proof enough of immortality. If we live in one mind, can't we communicate without the use of a physical body? And I know that, I personally know that's possible. When my grandparents died, two of my beloved grandparents, I didn't know what I would do without them, because they'd been such a wonderful presence in my life, because my parents didn't really have time for all five of us kids. So I spent a lot of time with them. And after they died, I didn't know, quite how I was supposed to deal with that. And what ended up happening was they would come to me in dreams. And when I sometimes be deep into grieving for them, I would they would come and they would talk to me in my dreams. And so I knew that although their bodies were no longer here, that they would come back to comfort me. And I've had this confirmed in readings that have been done for me, that at least one of my grandmothers is around me a lot, and my grandfather too. So on to the topic of heaven and hell. What you need to know is that God isn't out there to punish or reward us. That's just not part of the equation. And life is a blessing or it's a curse according to the use that we make of it. It's not about some being outside of us that creates hell in our lives. It's all up to us. And so there is no judge. When we die, there isn't somebody who's going to judge us and say, Bethany, let me talk to you. That just isn't going to happen. What happens is we tend to judge ourselves. We tend to be our own worst critic. We tend to get down on ourselves. And when we make mistakes in our life, we're the ones that suffer the consequences until we do the mental work to move on and to get beyond that. And so it's my opinion that when we reach a state of peace of mind that we've got real salvation, and that there is no devil that we need to worry about. There is no such thing as evil or good, because if our mind is at peace, it's all good. And so I believe that the reward and the punishment that we think about, that we've been taught as little children sometimes, that's simply a reflection of a state of mind of some people, and that doesn't have to exist in my reality. I want to read you something from this chapter. He says, we need fear nothing in the universe. We need not be afraid of God. We may be certain that all will arrive at the final goal and that not one of us will be missing. Every man is an incarnation of God. The soul can no more be lost than God could be lost. We should neither be disturbed by the wailing of prophets nor the anathemas of theology. We cannot believe that because we have subscribed to some creed that we have thereby purchased a seat in heaven. It's like a Redskins game.
Oh, I hope not. You're losing.
Oh, that's right. Nor can we believe in any vindictive or malicious power in the universe which damns us because we have erred through human ignorance. We believe in God and that He is good. What more can life demand of us than that we do the best that we can and try to improve? If we have done this, we've done well, and all will be right with our souls, both here and hereafter. This leaves us free to work out our own salvation, not with fear or even with trembling, but with peace and in quiet confidence. That's cool. Now, when we entered this life, you can imagine that we entered with hands that were happy to greet us. And I'm thinking of Ed's grandson as an example. He was looked forward to. His birth was looked forward to for months. Also, Catherine's grandchild as well. You know, you look forward to a baby's birth, and you can't wait to hold it. You can't wait to see it, to talk to it, to play with it, and even to help it through its teen years. So when you think about death, you can think about the same thing, that at the corollary is that on the other side, there's all kinds of people out there that have gone before us that can't wait for our reemergence into the total non-physical. I'm sorry.
You just sparked a memory. Sorry for the laughter. I'll share it maybe.
That's okay.
It was funny. I'll write a note.
Okay. And I remember when Connie talked a while ago about her mother when she passed over. And I think you were talking to your former husband at the time. Former being he had passed over. and that he you asked him something to the effect of, who's out there, who came to greet her, and he said everyone.
So there's two stories you got mixed up.
Okay.
I said to him, I asked him to help her, make her transition, make it easier for her to go
yeah.
over. And he said, I'd love to help you come, but I'd have to wait in line. And I get hit with a wave of love that was waiting for my mom at that moment. And then at her funeral, I said to her, as I had said almost every day for the previous 6 months, Mom, who's there with you? Because she was seeing all the dead folks in the corner. And on the day of her funeral, when I asked her that, she said, everybody. Mm. And it was the most joyful word I ever heard, because there were clearly no distinction for her anymore between living and dead. She was surrounded with
wow.
everyone she loved.
And that's the expectation that we should have. Mm-hmm. And I know from personal experience, when I began to leave my body, that's what I felt was this enormous... I didn't see people. Maybe I didn't die far enough, but...
right the next time.
I'll do it right the next time. But I just felt this tremendous peace and love, and it's something to look forward to.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason I had Allison read the reading that she did about being authentic about our feelings, our real issues come with our loved ones. When they pass over, how dare they go before us? We do miss them, and it's normal. It's normal to grieve, and I certainly have done my share of it in this life, and I don't look forward to that. And I think the only way through it is to be real about what you're feeling and to allow others to help you through that phase, through your grief. We love our friends, we love our family members that pass over, and we certainly are entitled to miss them. But I think understanding that in the big scheme of things, that we, you know, in the non-physical world, we're with whomever we wish to be with at any given time. So we will contact them. We are in contact with them if we wish to be. And that when you can expect that when we do die, that our loved ones will be there to greet us as we pass over. So we really need to be able to trust in life and realize that there's nothing in the universe that's wishing us ill. We, you know, people don't die just to torture us. It's just a part of life. There's no need to prepare to meet our maker, so to speak, because he's meeting us in every moment, every possible moment. We meet God in the rising sun, in the snow, in the flowing stream, in the budding roses, in the joy of friendship, in the love, and in the silence of our own souls. That's where we meet our maker. Now, one of the things that happened, you know, the manifestations that I was working on this talk, my dad asked me if I wanted to go see an opera with him, and the name of it was From the House of the Dead. And yes, it was based on a novel by Dostoevsky, and it took place in a prison camp. And it was based on the themes of hopelessness and lost love. And the reason I'm even bringing this up, other than the fact that it's interesting that I get to see an opera right at the time I'm preparing to give a talk on this subject, was there was an eagle that was there in the plot of the opera, and they had this fake eagle that was flapping its wings. Apparently one of its wings was broken, so it couldn't fly off. And so the eagle kept flapping its wings throughout the opera. And eventually, at the end, the eagle is allowed to go. He's freed, his wings have healed up, and he's allowed to go. And I just thought of that, how our souls are like that. You know, our souls, there's a part of us that always wants freedom, that wants new vistas, and so we soar at the time of our death. And so, in closing... You know, I kept thinking of that image of the eagle and of our soul departing our bodies. And I think we should prepare not to die, but to live every moment. And the thought of death should slip from our consciousness altogether. And when the great event of the soul takes place, it should be beautiful and it should be sublime. As the eagle, freed of its cage, soars to its native heights, so the soul, freed from the home of heavy flesh, it rises and returns to its father's house, naked and unafraid. And so it is.